Six Music.
BBC Radio, Six Music Documentaries. Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time with Janelle Monáe.
Nasdaq, sort of like a bag and a on crack. Come on.
I'm Matt Everett, and welcome to The First Time here on Six Music. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers. My guest this week on The First Time, Janelle Monáe. So in this interview from the archive, we hear about her very earliest musical influences, an upbringing surrounded by gospel and soul, and her passion for Michael Jackson and Lauryn Hill. We also discuss her alter ego, the android Cindy Mayweather, whose life story, loosely based on the film Metropolis, has kind of been woven throughout Janelle Monáe's albums. And we find out how hard it's been to step away from that character. Now she kind of exists. We also talk about the political aspect of her songwriting, her most recent album, Dirty Computer, and her close relationship with Prince. But I started by asking Janelle, as I do with all my guests, when was the first time she was aware of music?
The very first time I was aware of music as a kid.
Yeah.
I never was a kid.
Go.
I was, you know, always a floating spirit in the wind. That's a very difficult question for me. There's not a time that I can remember music not being a part of my life. So I'd like to think the story that I would like to go with is that my father, who was a musician, was constantly around singing to me, and my mother, who loves to sing as well, grew up in a musical family. So everyone was singing to me when I was a baby. In my mother's tummy. Some sounded great, some sounded horrible. But music and singing and notes and melodies and harmonies have been with me since the universe pushed me out of the time travel machine.
is the environment you've always lived in.
It's all. I mean, how I'm programmed, there are no memories that music was never in my life.
Okay, so what would be a song that maybe your parents might have sung?
I grew up in a church-centered family, you know, on both sides. My grandmother used to take the bus to church. She was that serious about going to church on Sundays. And then on my dad's side, both his maternal and paternal, or my maternal and paternal grandparents, were heavily involved in the choirs, and both my great-grandmothers played the organ. And I just remember hearing a lot of gospel songs. My earliest memory actually was in church of me singing. And I don't think it's what you probably think it will be, but the pastor, I remember him, Reverend Gray. I had to be about 3 or 4. My aunt tells me this story all the time.
Yeah.
But I was in church, and, you know, he's like sweating and hollering, and, you know, he's a Baptist preacher, and he's just in it, you know. People's wigs are flying off. And, you know, everybody is feeling the Holy Spirit. And out of nowhere, because my aunt used to play this song on the way to church, she would play Michael Jackson's Beat It. And it was one of my favorite songs growing up. I loved Michael Jackson. I still do love him, and I miss him dearly. But in the middle of the pastor giving this sermon, where people were falling out, passing out, here I come, according to my aunt, on like the second pew, saying, "Just beat it, beat it, beat it, beat it," like nonstop, to the point where the pastor had to look down at me and laugh himself, and then the whole congregation laughed. And so, yeah, I was, you know, that kid who would sing Michael Jackson in a Baptist church. I was a very secular artist at a young age.
Music just by hearing it, but what about the piece of music that you owned, that was yours, the first thing you held in your hand that was like, this belongs to me, this is my choice?
I remember working, I was a waitress at this place called Ponderosa Steakhouse, and I wasn't making a lot of money, and then I think I went on to work at Foot Locker, And I remember getting my first check, and The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill had come out, and I bought two of those CDs.
Why two?
Because I had a feeling that I would wear out one, and I just wanted a backup. And that was the first time I think I paid for a CD with my own money. And the place that I got it from double charged us for it, but I did not care. My mom was like, let's go here. And I was like, no, it's going to be sold out, you know, at another place. I have to get these CDs here. I wanted one for home, and I wanted one for her car. And so that's really why I got two, you know, to have easy access. And I just remember playing The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill over and over and over again. And then I would do talent showcases, and I sang the title track song, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, a cappella. And I won like three times singing that song. But her music, her message, her skin color, her hair, everything that she stood for meant so much to me growing up. You know, it really did help shape my identity as a young Black girl growing up in the States. And the way she mixed her spirituality with her you know, her love for her community, for the ghetto, the way she spoke about women's empowerment and how to get out of a bad relationship. The way she mixed all of her, you know, to be this complex human being really helped me as I decided that I was going to be an artist. It let me know that I can be all of me.
My world, it moves so fast today. The past, it seems so far away. And life squeezes so tight that I can't breathe. And every time I've tried to be what someone else thought of me, so caught up, I was unable to achieve. But deep in my heart, the answer, it wasn't me. And I made up my mind to define fire went. What happened to everything we used to be? I hear so many cry for help, searching outside of themselves. Now I know that his strength is within me.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
6 Music.
I'm Matt Everett, and this is the first time on Six Music, where we look at the key first moments in an artist's career. And my guest this week is Janelle Monáe, and that was Cold War, taken from Janelle's first album, The Arch Android, from 2010. Now, many times, Janelle has used her fame as a platform to talk about social reform. Her track, Hell You Townbout, directly addresses police brutality in the US. I asked her when she first became politicised.
Well, I mean, growing up as a young black, you know, girl and woman in the United States of America, you know, I grew up in what's considered to be a poor community in Kansas City, Kansas, Wyandotte County. It's one of the poorest counties in the state, and or it's the poorest county in the state. And my parents were janitors, sanitation workers, post office workers. They wore uniforms every day. And I wore my black and white and sometimes a tuxedo, you know, to pay homage to them, you know, to let them know that I'm thinking about them and this is where I come from. And so when you grow up black, you grow up poor, when you grow up in a society or in a world, in a country where even right now, the rich are getting richer, the poor are staying poor, the minorities are not excelling and given the opportunities in the way of a more privileged white person, you can't help but to see it through that lens. You know, you can't help but to feel like, or I can't help for to inspire my songwriting, because that's all I knew. You know, I know what it feels like to have a grandmother who picked cotton for this country and for her not to be able to use water fountains or bathrooms because of the color of her skin. Ancestors built the White House. You know, you have people in the White House right now, today, who push immigrants and minorities and women's rights and women in general to the margins of the society, because of patriarchy and because they are abusing power. You know, they're out of fear that this country is headed into a more inclusive space. So for me, I feel I didn't always know this, but at a young age, I've always felt like I've had a inner monologue with myself, or conversations that I've had with myself about these things that just kind of spill over into my writing. I think music brings people together. I think that through music and lyrics, you can empathize more with the other, and those who have been identified as the other, from the LGBTQ community to minorities, to women, to immigrants, to the excommunicated, to all who have felt ostracized because of who they love, because of what God they choose to serve, what they look like. I've always felt a part of that society because that's all I grew up around.
We did an interview with Mavis Staples for this show. She wouldn't even say Donald Trump's name. She was like, I'm not even going to say it.
I'm not either. I love you, Mavis.
Talking about the White House, there's that brilliant performance of Tightrope at the White House, and it's a great performance. Just a real crackle to it, and you're playing in front of the Obamas.
Yes.
I mean, how does it feel walking into the White House for the first time? Because that's kind of connected to what you were saying before. That's an important thing for anyone.
Well, walking into the White House when President Obama is our president and First Lady, you know, our First Lady is Michelle Obama, you know, such a queen. And, you know, their beautiful children, Sasha and Malia and you know, their grandmother. Walking in that White House when they're in the White House is, I can imagine, totally different from just going to the White House. I have no desire to go to the White House anymore until we get the type of people in the White House that genuinely care about people and care about the people that I love, you know, people like my parents. And I will just forever be indebted to President Obama and our First Lady Michelle Obama, who always called me whenever they wanted me to perform. I think I performed at the White House, and I'm not trying to boast. I'm being very honest because it's shocking to me. I still can't believe it. I've probably performed at the White House over 8 times.
Get off.
Yeah.
Tell
definitely.
Me. What
I did the state dinner. I did an Easter egg roll. I did the second inauguration after party. I did like Women in Soul. I did a few other things, you know, that were kind of private there. And those people, first of all, they know how to party. They know how to run this country and party at the same time. Smart, giving, warm, honest, and really did care about women's rights, minorities' rights, poor. Like, that's all I can really say.
Another name we have to talk about. We have to talk about Prince. You mentioned him before. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously there is a kinship. When did you first fall in love with him? Or has it just been, has that music, as you say, just been part of you and there's no start and there'll be no end?
Well, it's a bit difficult, you know, for me to really talk about Prince because I did have a personal relationship with him. As I mentioned earlier, and I just kind of tried to gloss over it, but, you know, I miss him a lot. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who really does miss him. He impacted a lot of people, not just, you know, on an artistic level for me and other people I know that he's mentored. But personally, you know, he was very funny. You know, not a lot of people know that. But I mean, I guess you should know. I mean, look at the world that he's built through his albums. You know, it's very clever in smart writing and honest writing and just the kind of lyrics you wish you could write. But he was a giver, always there to give advice, always there to encourage. You know, he really was a believer in what Wonderland, my arts collective and production team, what we were trying to do. And, you know, he was also someone who shared the stage. I opened up for Prince a lot. And each experience was different, magical. No matter how long I have known him, the mystery was always there, but he never allowed his mystery to get in the way of his giving, in the way of his advice, in the way of his nurturing, in the way of his humor. You know, he just really... He was a magical person. That's all I can really say. And I feel his spirit with me. I feel it. I think, like you mentioned, I think he's been with me since the beginning, and he'll be with me until the end.
Tracy died soon after a long-fought civil war. Just after I wiped away his last tear. I guess he's better off than he was before. Better off than the fools he left here. I used to cry for Tracy 'cause he was my only friend. Those kind of cars don't pass you every day. Tracy, 'cause I want to see him again. But sometimes life ain't always the way. Sometimes it snows in April. Sometimes I feel so bad, so bad. Sometimes I wish that life was never ending. And all good things they say never last. Springtime was always my favorite time of year. A time for lovers holding hands in the rain. Now springtime only reminds me of Tracy's tears. Always cry for love, never cry for pain. He used to say so strong, oh, love brain, to die on a friend of the dead that left me hypnotized. No, staring at his picture, I realize no one could cry the way my Tracy cried.
What's your relationship like with music? Is it always, because it seems to be partially this kind of spiritual thing, even early on, partially kind of a playful thing, partially a gift that you, that just chooses you, mm-hmm. sort of thing. Has it always been like that, even back then? Has it always been a very complex relationship?
My dad always says, what you want, wants you back, good or bad, you know. I believe in the law of attraction, and I do believe that I think I've been really programmed to be an artist and never feel like there's something else I'm supposed to do. Mm. Maybe there is. Maybe when my code, you know, becomes altered or updated, I'll go off and do something else. But, you know, I've known that I was supposed to tell stories and be honest and vulnerable in my storytelling. At a very young age, since I was writing for the Coterie Theater's Young Playwrights Roundtable. You know, I would write these short stories inspired by science fiction. You know, after writing so much science fiction and just being inspired by the possibilities of creating these world-building, these big world-building stories, as an independent artist, I wanted my first EP and album to be a concept album. And I discovered David Bowie and the Spiders, you know, Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, Stevie Wonder's Music of My Mind, Songs in the Key of Life, Pink Floyd's The Wall. You know, I was just so enamored by their work and these characters that I believe are a part of them, you know, just an extension of what we know them to be. The way they were able to channel that, you know, was something that I thought about subconsciously, and it did happen. You know, it started to happen. In fact, it's odd, or not odd, but it's interesting because Philip K. Dick is one of my favorite writers, and Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep was a book that I, you know, read when I was working on my first EP, Metropolis. And just last year, I ended up doing his anthology series. I did Electric Dreams, and my episode was Autofac, and I played an android. And his daughter, you know, reached out to me, and she said, I remember you thanking my dad in your liner notes. Would you please do this movie? And I said, hell yeah. You know, so it's just that law of attraction, speaking things into existence, that I think is pretty cool. I think it's cool once you really look at it.
It's very interesting. You mentioned Bowie there. And I think all the artists that you mentioned, alter ego is a very simplistic way of thinking about it, because you say it's elements of the being and elements of the wanting to be. And I wonder why people do it for different reasons. Some people do it because of fear and it's easier to construct something. Some people do it because it's them turned up to 11. Some people do it because they can't express themselves. Even an artist, say, like a Paul McCartney, appears to be a normal guy, but that's part of his construct. It's like, if I act like a normal guy, then I won't have to deal with the fact that I'm Paul McCartney. I'm
different. Yeah, yeah.
Why were you drawn to that way of expressing yourself?
That's interesting that you use the word fear. With this particular album, I knew that I needed to make Dirty Computer before my first album. And I do think that it was easier for me to speak about Cindy Mayweather and to speak more about the future and into the future than it was for me to really speak about Janelle Monáe and stay more near future. I knew that I needed to make this album, but I knew that it was going to take a deeper level of honesty and vulnerability. It was going to take living with myself more and understanding myself as a subject more. And this time around, that's what I was most focused on. I went back and forth. Okay, Cindy Mayweather, Janelle Monáe. Like, literally, these are the conversations that I would have. And ultimately, Janelle Monáe won. And it's terrifying, though, because, you know, for my last two albums and up to date, all people have known from me is Cindy Mayweather, the Arc Android and Metropolis and the Electric Lady. I think on the Electric Lady, I kind of have my foot in both worlds. I was still trying to decide, but this album, I really committed to saying that my honesty was more important than my mystery or my freedom with expressing myself, however it may be, whether it resonates with people or not, whether it turns off, you know, my existing supporters or not, was more important than mystery.
I'm an alien from outer space. I'm a cyber girl without a face, a heart or a mind.
I'm a product of the middle. I'm a product of the middle.
Stevie Wonder. There are so many different clips of you performing with him, and there's Superstition, there's Higher Ground, and tell me about the first time you meet someone like that. How do you cope with meeting Stevie Wonder for the first time is the question.
I feel like I've known Stevie Wonder my entire life because my parents always played, you know, all of his hits. And then when I got older and started to get into songwriting, I would dig deeper and I would discover songs that were not on the radio or that were not being played at you know, the parties, like Village Ghetto Land and Inner Visions, just to name a couple of his songs that just, you know, touched me to the core. This is a really cool story. when my first album came out, I wrote him a handwritten letter. There were two people I gave a copy of the Arc Android. Go Prince on. And Stevie Wonder. I got to give Prince his copy when I met him, mm-hmm. When he invited me over to Paisley Park. And I wrote it down on a piece of paper, handwritten, and signed it and put like a flower on the CD. Stevie Wonder, we knew someone who knew him. So I just like wrote a letter and sent it to his agent. And I was like, I hope that he gets it. But then I get this call after the album had come out from his team saying that Stevie would like for you to play at one of his benefit concerts, charity concerts, to give away toys in Los Angeles. And I was like, what? I was like, oh my God, he knows about me.
Just the fact that he knows you
He
exist.
Knows about me. That was really it.
Yeah.
I really didn't even have to play. It was just like, whatever. The fact that Stevie Wonder knows that I exist, knows that, potentially know, you know, got my letter and heard my album. I hope he has. You know, that's enough for me. That's all I need. I want to be heard by Stevie Wonder. And so when I got there, I remember doing sound check and being nervous, like, because I didn't know if I was going to meet him or not. And all I hear in the hallway is somebody singing my song, Tightrope. I hear that, and I know this voice, obviously, because I've been coddled by it my whole life. And I turn around, and it's Stevie Wonder singing my song, sounding incredible, a cappella. And I just remember running over to him and just hugging him and him hugging me and him telling me how much of a fan he was of the music. Then his daughter, Aisha, was there, and she said that she told her dad when the album came out, she set him down in the kitchen and was like, you need to listen to this album. You need to hear this artist, Janelle Monáe. Like, you need to listen to it. And so they both told me that when the album came out, they sat in the kitchen and they listened to the Arc Android. And he sang Oh Maker. He sang so many songs that I just, it just melted me inside. And he's been, you know, like a mentor to me ever since. I love you, Stevie.
I was made to love.
This is the first time with me, Matt Everett, and that was Stevie Wonder, an artist who had a massive impact on my guest this week on the first time, Janelle Monáe.
Do you enjoy, especially now you are more Janelle than you are Cindy, do you enjoy this? Do you enjoy creating this world around yourself? Because, yeah, it's fun, but it comes with a certain amount of responsibility, it comes with a certain amount of pressure, you know?
Sure. I think everything comes with pressure at this point, you know, in my life. But I think Serena Williams said it, and I'm probably, you know, not quoting her very well, but I think she said that, you know, she doesn't listen to the only amount of pressure that she applies or she responds to is the pressure that she puts on herself. So I just don't allow myself to feel extra pressure. You know, I will say I am deeply nervous and terrified, actually. So I guess I take all that back. I'm kind of terrified. I don't know who's going to come along with me for this journey. You know, I don't. And it's always a risk when you decide to choose your freedom, your personal evolution, over the fear, or over your comfort zone, or over living in someone else's expectations of who you should be. You have to actively choose freedom every single day because it comes with great sacrifice. You know, you may lose some people, you may gain, you know, some people you just don't know. But I'm also very anxious for the emotion picture, for the film to come out, for people to really understand me as a more complicated, complex individual. And I'm learning that everything is not black and white. As much as I wear black and white, I'm more inspired by the gray area, you know, not having all the answers, not being afraid to say, I don't know, you know, not feeling like I have to be a slave of anybody's interpretations of who I should be. And also understanding that there's so many other important things, you know, I'm a piece of the fabric. The world does not revolve around me. I don't exist unless you guys say I exist. And I think there's power in knowing that, and knowing that all of this is made up. It really is. I think it's cute and it's fun, but I don't need to take everything seriously, because in fact, it's something we can create and we can uncreate.
Sometimes I wanna roll or stay at home. Walk in contradiction, get some factual and fiction. A little crazy, little sexy, little cool. Little rough around the edges, but I keep it smooth. I'm always left to center, and it's right where I belong. I'm the random minor note you hear in major songs, and I like that.
Erykah Badu, one of my favourite, it's more than a video, it's kind of a proper film that you did for Queen, is with her. What did you learn from working with her?
Erykah is just, I mean, she is, we were very close, and she was actually like? one of the first women in the industry to embrace me and take me on tour with her. So a lot of, you know, before my full-length album came out, I was on tour with Erykah Badu, and she's so nurturing, so giving. She's cool. She's funny. She is very smart. She has her own way. She's very particular about the way that she does things, too, which is interesting to watch. Obviously, she dresses so interesting and so magical. You know, she's magical. She really is. The way she balances her family and career, she does that on her own terms. And so that's always been very inspiring to watch a woman like Erykah redefine what it means to be, you know, a black woman creative in this world, and she does things on her own time, and but she's a friend. We call each other 20, as in it's a code. I can't tell you, you know, why we call each other that, but there's a bond there, and a bond that, you know, I'm always thankful for.
What one of the tracks should we play at this juncture?
One of the songs that I love from Erica. I love so much of her music. It's kind of hard to pick one. I'll pick one off her most recent bodies of work that she released. I Can Make You Put Your Phone Down.
I can make you put your phone down. I can make you put your phone down. I can make you put your phone down. Cruise through the city. I can make you put your phone down. You ain't gon' text no one when you with me. I can make you put your phone down, so you can show me attention. And I'll cut mine off too. Boy, that I hear when I listen. I can make you put your phone down. Baby, we don't need it. Every time you get a message, act like you don't see it. I can make you put your phone down. Damn, do you copy? I can make you put your phone down. Boy, that ain't gon' stop me. I can make you put your phone down. 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 You know I wanna check that again. I can make you put your phone down. Riding in the drop, hair blowing in the wind. Baby, I will put my phone down. Cause when you talk, I'ma listen. I can make you put your phone down. Leave it at the crib, guarantee you wouldn't miss it. I can make you put your phone down. And it wouldn't leave your pocket. I can make you put your phone down. Probably wouldn't even know how to unlock it. I can make you put your phone down. See your friend calling, but forget him. I can make you put your phone down. Your mama probably think you out of this, and I can make you put your phone down. 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 Yeah. I can make you put your phone down. I can make you put your phone.
And the final question. Final question we ask everybody. We've had all these firsts. What's the last song that we should play? It's your choice.
The last song that we should play.
Anything of yours? Something you heard this morning? Something you've loved your whole life? Something with a new record?
Yeah, you know what? Maybe what I can play. I mean, what I'd like to play. We need to play Make Me Feel.
It's a good
That's what we need to do. You know, this is about celebration. This is about celebrating our differences and uniting and partying. And those who are oftentimes not seen and heard feeling like they are seen, they are heard, and they do matter. Let's keep that jam going around the world. So Make Me Feel.
Then we should finish on this song. It's been very good to speak to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Baby, don't make me spell it out for ya. All of the feelings that I got for ya can't be explained, but I can try for ya. Yeah, baby, don't make me spell it out for ya. You keep on asking me the same questions. Why? And second guessing all my intentions. Should know by the way I use my compression that you got the answers to my confessions.
Radio 6 Music.
I got out of bed today. Swear to God, couldn't see my face. I got out of bed today, staring at a ghost who forgot to float away. Didn't have all that much to say. Wouldn't even tell me his own name and where'd my body go. The demons out of my head. You can't kill the thing that's already dead, so leave my soul alone. I don't need no surgery. Take those knives away from me. Just wanna die in my own body. A ghost just needs a home.
Yeah. You only write one cigarettes and alcohol in your lifetime, if you're lucky.
Straight up bangers, obscure gems and long forgotten favourites.
Every emotion has a sound to it.
You just gotta do you.
This is Alt 90s on BBC Sounds.